Back together again, you and I chatting it up midweek Wednesday style, the 4th of February, 2026, right here on Connecticut Today. Governor Ned Lamont's annual State of the State address, some of his controversial comments, too, regarding ICE agents in Connecticut, topping the show for us. I had my own thoughts about that. Also, we heard more on opinions regarding that address from State Senate GOP leader Steve Harding and Hearst Connecticut Media senior editor and columnist Dan Harp, also weighing in on the address. CBS News D.C. reporter Aaron Navarro checked in on a call from President Trump to, quote-unquote, nationalize U.S. elections in the future. You know, part of being, I think, an effective leader, whether you're a leader on your local city or town council, your board of alders, your representative town meeting, whether you're a local leader in the General Assembly, whether you're the governor of a state, whether you're a national leader, world leader, whatever. One thing I've always said is above and beyond policy, it's about the tone you set. And you can have some very divisive policies, but you can maybe, it's the old term we hear, soft sell something, especially if you know something is not really popular or may divide the electorate. But I think it, to be an effective and a respected leader, you've got to understand that you're also speaking to people who don't agree with you, that they may have a fundamental disagreement with who you are, with stuff you're doing right now, with stuff you did in the past, with your party, whatever. And that's politics 101. We see that every minute of every day that you and I get together, usually Monday through Friday from 2 to 6, to talk about all this craziness here. So, you know, that's not a completely foreign topic to us. But sometimes I think politicians on both sides, listen, Republicans and Democrats, Democrats and Republicans, you get so drawn into what your side wants to hear in an election year that when you are giving addresses, you have blinders on and you're worried about giving your base red meat. And sometimes you say things that I know you're saying them, you know, you can tell this stuff is read, it's off the teleprompter, it's not off the cuff here, it's not ad-libbing, but I think a true leader, or somebody who at least knows that there are people that disagree with you, a true leader can couch things in language that may to some extent have people on the other side saying, well, okay, but at least I'm glad he said that. Now, Governor Ned Lamont in the State of the State address, we'll have a longer chunk of it coming up later on in the show. The governor said several things today, and he began and ended with ICE. Now, I'm not surprised. It's an election year. He needs to throw some red meat to his base. He has to. He's got a moderate challenge coming from Josh Elliott. I don't know if Elliott gets on the ballot. You never know. There could be a Zoran Mamdani thing going here. I don't know. So he started with ICE. I said, well, okay, now he's got the obligatory ICE references out of the way. And he talked about several policy things, good, bad, and otherwise. And then at the end, though, when he was lauding the fine men and women of the Connecticut State Police Force and our local police, which many people in his own party look to restrict more and more, Gary Winfield and company there in Hartford, he was very nice about the state police and the local police, but then he segued back into ICE. And I think what he said about ICE here, it should not have been said by a leader. I think the tone he set in this was combative, and he said something that the end of this, and this is about a minute and 20-second clip I'm going to play for you here. I want to know your feelings on this. At 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Now, again, we know why he said this. He's a Democrat. There's a cranky progressive part of his party, and it's an election year. So I know a lot of you are saying, hey, Einstein, you know why he's doing this. Yes, thank you. Thank you much. I understand that. But there's a part of this, and I'm going to play this clip for you after the break here. There is a part of this clip where I said, okay, oh, really? And we hear these constant, descriptions here from people in this state with little or no evidence here. So Governor Ned Lamont took a pretty good shot here today verbally at ICE, as all blue governors are, because that they got the memo on that. They're pulling out the index card, I get that. But I want to hear from you. I'm going to play this clip coming up. We'll take you through the break here, too. I want to leave plenty of time if we get reaction to this at the bottom of the hour. At 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Now, I'll tell you what he said before I couch it and exactly how he said it. And this is our question of the day here. We start off at facebook.com/voiceofct. Once again, facebook.com/voiceofct. And I ask you this. In today's State of the State address, Governor Ned Lamont told ICE to go home. He wants ICE to go home. Is that irresponsible? It's a federal agency. They're licensed to operate. Now, again, you may not be happy with what has happened with ICE over the country, even some stuff here in Connecticut. But is it irresponsible of a governor who represents both the people that voted for him and the people that did not vote for him? Is that irresponsible of the governor saying, go home? Or should he have said in that speech, listen, we will endeavor to work more with the federal government to make sure ICE doesn't overstep its bounds? Or did he say what he said simply because it's an election year? You tell me. We'll have that clip coming up right here on WICC. All right, so Governor Ned Lamont throwing some red meat to the left in his party today. It is Connecticut. I get it. It's a blue state, but I don't know. Should a sitting governor have said the following? You tell me. 203-333-9422. 333-WICC. Now, remember, he's the governor of everybody, not just the people that voted for him. So he started the State of the State address, and I kind of knew there'd be something in there about ICE. I kind of knew that. So he started at the beginning and he wielded it into Thomas Paine. Then at the end, after lauding local law enforcement and, you know, he of the party that ties their hands, he said this.
They see the world as us versus them. They're not trained to de-escalate. I think they're barely trained at all. They hide behind a mask. They come to Connecticut, Minneapolis, to arrest people outside of schools, courthouses, often based upon the color of their skin. Some of our Hispanic kids are scared to go to school. Those kids at Wilbercross High School in New Haven, we call them dreamers. The White House calls them criminal aliens. That young mother shot twice in the head in Minneapolis. The White House called her a domestic terrorist. She reminded me of my daughter. Connecticut is protecting our schools and courthouses where people go not to break the law because they're following the law. ICE, everywhere you go uninvited, violence follows. Go home. We're keeping our Connecticut safe without you.
Here it is. There's the red meat. And again, I'm going to play this again before the break. It's a minute and 20 seconds long, but I want you to hear this. He makes a couple of assertions in there. Now, maybe he's got information that I don't. I'll give him that. Maybe I'm missing stories here, but where is ICE in Connecticut actually arresting people based on the color of their skin? Now, again, you can be anti-ICE. I'm not saying you can despise ICE. You can want it abolished. You can say never set foot in the state, which, again, is irresponsible because ICE is here all the time. They just grabbed somebody they wanted at Wallingford the other day. Good on them. Or maybe you can say, listen, we have concerns about ICE, but don't worry. Are we even engaging them? I don't know. Or is the governor and the attorney general just trying to drive them out of the state? What if some people in Connecticut? Now, again, I'm just, what a leader does is say, especially in occasions like this, well, I have to reflect the wishes and maybe the thoughts of people who did not vote for me, who have no intention of voting for me, and maybe not my party either. So Governor Lamont could have taken a cautionary stance today on immigration. He could have taken a cautionary stance on ICE, but he curb stomped him. He carpet bombed him, which I guess is his prerogative, I guess. But again, Governor, why is ICE has been here? Why is it not your party? And your party that stands up and proudly and say, well, we will not cooperate with ICE. And we have sanctuary cities and sanctuary states. Why is ICE not a real problem in 2/3 of the country? And this notion that they're picking people up because of their skin color. All right. Do we have hard evidence that that is happening en masse in the state of Connecticut? Do we know that? Because I have not seen any of that on the television stations. I have not been appraised of that, nor has Lisa, nor has Melissa, or anybody else here on the radio station that we know of. I read the Hearst publications and the Current and every day, and there's been an occasional controversial arrest. But again, you say that ICE is picking up people because of the color of their skin. Well, do we know that's a policy here in Connecticut? Do we know that? Or was that just an irresponsible thing to say? Well, the kids are afraid to go to school. Okay, but the kids are kids of parents who, for whatever reason, are not here with the correct legal status. That's a decision they made. And again, like I said yesterday, we're getting so knee-deep in what does ICE do and what does ICE not do and why are they here and why is Trump all square for them and the Democrats, where we lose the big picture here as to why they are doing what they do, what they're doing. So the governor says he wants ICE to go home. He wants ICE to get out of Connecticut. You agree with him on that or not? And do you believe what he is saying here?
They see the world as us versus them. They're not trained to de-escalate. I think they're barely trained at all. They hide behind a mask. They come to Connecticut, in Minneapolis, to arrest people outside of schools, courthouses, often based upon the color of their skin. Some of our Hispanic kids are scared to go to school. Those kids at Wilbur Cross High School in New Haven, we call them dreamers. The White House calls them criminal aliens. That young mother shot twice in the head in Minneapolis. The White House called her a domestic terrorist. She reminded me of my daughter. Connecticut is protecting our schools and courthouses where people go not to break the law because they're following the law. ICE, everywhere you go uninvited, violence follows. Go home. We're keeping our Connecticut safe without you.
Red meat alert, red meat election year. But now listen, he said a couple of things there that I'm like, all right. Well, he said he wasn't sure they receive any training at all. All right, Governor, what are you basing that on? I mean, you as a leader of everyone, not just the people that vote for you, sir, with all due respect, as a leader of everyone, you need to elaborate on that. I'm sorry, you just do. And then you say, well, often they, now there've been scattered reports across the country, but What is going on here in Connecticut? Our buddy Dan Haar from Hearst, a few months back last year, he wrote a story about, people not really being able to identify any increased ICE activity to any great extent here in Connecticut. But the governor is like, these are marauding hordes attacking courthouses. I know he's running for re-election. I get it. But a true leader, before he or she says something, says, wait a minute, the audience is more than just the people that like me. All right, among the folks who listened to Governor Ned Lamont's campaign speech today in the State House chamber in Hartford, our buddy, our pal, the Republican State Senate leader, Steve Harding. Steve, good afternoon. Great that you're here with us. Steve, not exactly a fireside chat today when it comes to ICE. Huh? How about that?
No. It's quite interesting because this was a Governor Paul that turned out he's talking about stepping away from the division and divide that you see in Washington, D.C. and working together and collaborating, and then goes into one of the most divisive speeches I've heard in a very long time from anybody, frankly, for that matter. So, for me, it's a typical example of, do as I say, not as I do, because it was extremely divisive. I think he made some comments that I would argue are far to the left. I mean, he basically said in the speech openly he wants ICE out of the state. So I guess that means he wants no immigration control when it comes down to individuals that are convicted of terrible, heinous crimes and doesn't believe that immigration should be involved in deporting them. I mean, that is a step to take that is left of Governor Tim Walz in his position on ICE.
Steve, I said earlier, true leadership is somebody, a man or a woman from either party, that can sit up there and understand, Steve, even with a divisive issue, that, hey, I'm the governor of the whole state. And I'm also the governor of people that may not have voted for me, but they're good people who are genuinely concerned about something. And to me, and I've always kind of respected Governor Lamont's tone about those stuff. But, Steve, that, and I had another caller earlier that said, this didn't sound like him. It's almost sounded forced. It's an election year, Steve, and we get that. We understand that. But I wonder if he was dragged. Now, there's no excuse for this. Don't get me wrong. But I wonder if he was dragged kicking and screaming into this. I don't know.
I've been to enough of his speeches and have heard enough of his press conferences and statements, he's been governor in this state since 2018, and I've been a legislature that entire time.
Yeah.
But whatever caller called up and said that is spot on, because I was thinking the same exact thing as he's making his speech, that this is not the Governor Lamont that I know, that usually kind of, really is careful with his words and not trying to offend either side, understanding, the aspect of what you just mentioned, Paul, which is, despite the fact that you may be a registered Democrat and elected as a Democrat, you're elected as governor for everybody, Republican or Democrat.
Yeah.
And this was one of those speeches. This was a Governor Malloy-esque speech, frankly. Back when I was in the legislature, when he was there, these were very consistent with the kind of very divisive, very partisan speeches he would give. And it's clearly, this was to your point, Paul, this was absolutely a campaign speech. This was not a state of the state.
Yeah.
This isn't a budget address. This was just blatantly a campaign speech for the governor.
Yeah. Other things here, Steve, as we move on, the $200 per person if you make under $100,000, $400 for a couple if you make under $400,000. Geez, it's nice, Steve, that the party in charge is finally realizing, hey, your electric bills are high. That's nice of them, isn't it?
It would be funny if it weren't so sad that people have to struggle in this state. But, this is the governor, Paul, that has gotten around every volatility cap, spending cap to the tune of, so he could spend $3 billion more over the past 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And all he's got to show for it is giving a $200 rebate to a working class family and say, here you go, this is your energy rebate. I mean, it just goes to show you how out of touch he is. That is such a typical billionaire in Greenwich response to tackling the affordability crisis we have in this state. And to your point, this is there is only one party in this state that bears responsibility for this. It is the party that has been in control of this state now for 30 years, for nearly a generation. This party has been in control. They've told you all along, oh, no, energy bills aren't that high. Oh, no, our taxes aren't that high. Well, look around. Mm. Facts are facts. Numbers are numbers. We're the third highest in taxes in the country. We're the third highest in electric rates in the country. We're number one in property taxes in the country. We are an unaffordable state, and all the governor has to show for it is a $200 rebate. Give me a break.
Steve, finally, I know the session's about to get underway. There's been a lot of reports that there will be moves to alter what landlords can do, maybe getting rid of no-fault evictions, the idea of the state coming in and bigfooting cities and towns about building, you know, mother-in-law apartments or what you could build on your property. Houses of worship will get special clearance maybe on some zoning. What are you hearing about that? Is any of that conceptual? Yeah. Is it going to happen? What's up with all that?
Why? There's certainly Democrats that are going to push for that, and I find it very questionable because they're talking out of two sides of their mouth. And in one side of their mouth, they're saying that we have such a housing crisis in the state that we have to uproot all local zoning, and we have to have the state come in and basically tell you what to develop and where it gets developed. But at the same exact time, they want to make it almost impossible to be a landlord. Mm. So what person in their right mind would invest in property or invest in building property or residential property when we have laws potentially in place that wouldn't allow that property owner to occupy the space or to move somebody else in if they wanted to? It's their own property. See, basically, you want laws in place saying that the property that you own, that's your property, you basically you're stuck with whoever you put in there initially unless you could find a reason for fault. Mm-hmm. I get it. We want to reduce these evictions if we have to, but mm-hmm. at the same time, you're telling a property owner they don't have rights to their own property, and at the same time, trying to say, oh, we need more housing development. Well, the only way you're going to get housing development is if you have investors that feel that it's a worthwhile investment. When you create laws like that and make it impossible to evict individuals, and in some cases, individuals that deserve to be evicted for not payment or destroying the property, you're not going to get any further investment.
Mm, absolutely. Well, Steve, keep us up to date on what's going on here. Appreciate it. Steve Harding, take care, man. Appreciate
it. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. Appreciate it. Hearst Connecticut Media senior editor and columnist Dan Haar, who obviously was watching and listening to the Governor's State of the State address closely today, I would assume. Mr. Haar, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Good. Very closely. Very closely.
Dan, what about the overall, taking the speech as a whole today, what did you think?
I thought it was an excellent campaign speech.
Yeah.
well, you know, listen, this is not just the budget address. This is a State of the State address. And even though it's not the long session when you have the sort of through budget and state of the state address, this is the shorter version. It's not a shorter speech. And so he goes about telling all the great things that the state government is doing in his administration.
Mm-hmm.
And he has his opponents there, which I was keyed in on.
Yeah.
And he on the one hand, this is a criticism of him. And I give the speech high marks. But one criticism of him from the Republicans is that he talked about, we have a lower temperature of discourse here. We're not hot on each other's collars the way they are in Washington. And then he talked about ice out. And that led three Republicans to walk out.
Yeah.
A fourth walked out right at that moment, and a Republican. And I asked him, I said, were you part of the walkout? And he said, no, I had to use the bathroom.
Oh, yeah.
You can't make this up, right? So let's say that fourth Republican is not part of the walkout.
Yeah.
But two state reps and Senator Sampson mm-hmm. walked out when he got in the middle of his biggest applause line, which was the ice out.
Mm-hmm.
So that was certainly a big deal. something that we were all paying attention to. And but nobody made a scene. Nobody said anything on the way out. Nobody screamed. One state representative, Pavlok D'Amato, Kara Pavlok D'Amato, wore an Ice In jacket.
Mm-hmm.
Ice In. So, you know, there was some color at the event, but mostly it was the governor going over his accomplishments, which are significant, and his plans, which are somewhat significant, although it's an off year, so there's not a huge amount of adjustment.
Yeah. Do you think, Dan, before we move on to other elements of this, do you think that if it was not an election year, that the governor, maybe he would have mentioned it, but as you say, might he have been a little less aggressive in the ICE wording? You think his campaign people, and I think you mentioned it once here, that it's his third go-around, so he probably has a younger staff now. You think they said, hey, you got to come out hard on this, or you think that was of his own volition?
I think that was on his own. I think the thing that you saw that's a campaign year issue is the proposal itself for the $200 or $400 rebate.
Yeah.
That's something that one only does in a campaign year.
Yeah.
So I think the ICE, listen, that's the national issue. If you're a Democrat or if you're any person who objects to the president of the country where you live sending the military into the streets to kill U.S. citizens, if you're any person who opposes that, you speak out. And I don't see that as an election issue, but I definitely see the rebate. I have never in 30 years of doing this heard of a rebate coming to voters in a non-election year.
Yeah. And other stuff, Dan, I mean, budget, he was very quick to kind of do, and this didn't surprise me. Hey, let's not screw this up fiscally, as he's wanting to say, Dan Har, we're doing better. Let's not go nuts here. We'll make sure everybody gets some money. But nothing really surprised me on that front. Did it you or not?
No, there were some little things that are interesting. I wouldn't say surprising, like they're because of the scandal involving Senator McCrory up in Hartford, and he has not been accused of any wrongdoing, but it's still a scandal because money disappeared. Again, not saying that that was at his hand, but money that he sent to nonprofits.
Yeah,
the earmarks are being looked at much more closely, and almost definitely, that's a bipartisan effort. There will almost definitely be a tightening of how earmarks are handed out. So that's going to give state senators and reps less control over the money that goes in their districts. Eliminating a state department, Office of Health Strategy is being eliminated. It just started up not that many years ago.
Yeah.
That's the one that regulates hospitals. That's going back to OPM and back to the Department of Public Health. It gives yet more power to the governor's office. So it was lost in the fray today is that the taking of half the work of the Office of Health Strategy and putting it under the governor's office, which is what OPM is, is part of the imperialization of executive branches, whether at the state or federal levels. And there are still some people among us who are concerned about that, but it's not the biggest thing in the world. Early childhood. That's going to continue to fund early childhood.
Yeah.
There's a lot of little things like that. That's not little, but a lot of things like that.
Yeah, and I wanted to ask you before we wrap up here, the school breakfast basically for everybody in the state, K through 12, you think that flies or not?
Well, it's failed a number of times, despite the fact that it's not a very expensive item. The reason it has failed is because some people find it distasteful to buy free breakfast for rich kids.
Sure.
Right. And so, but the argument is that if rich kids don't get free breakfast and only the poor kids get free breakfast, the poor kids don't eat the free breakfast because they don't want to feel singled out.
Oh.
And so for the amount of money you're spending, it makes all the sense in the world to just don't check anybody's wallet.
Yeah.
Just give everybody breakfast. Half the rich kids aren't eating a good breakfast anyway at home, you know. I know my kid rich, but certainly we could afford all the eggs we wanted. But breakfast breakfast never seemed to happen very effectively in my house when my kid was growing up.
No, so. And I agree with you. I mean, Dan, the income level doesn't guarantee that a kid's eating properly at home, right? So give it to everybody.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah.
So it makes all the sense in the world, but primarily because the kids who feel like they're being singled out and pointed at because they can't afford breakfast, if you only give them breakfast,
yeah,
just think about what that
sure.
looks like.
Absolutely. And Dan, finally, on another note, I want to thank you sincerely for the piece you wrote about the whole fiasco with Linda McMahon and the school in Fairfield. I tell people this all the time. If you don't like somebody, you don't like where they come from, you should at least hear what they have to say. You did draw some derisive comments on my comment line here on my text board, but a lot of people were also telling me they agreed with that. So I don't like an illiberal society, Dan, and I just wondering, did you get a lot of feedback on that for saying?
I did. I got a lot of lessons taught to me by liberals who think that I was pro-Trump, who
yeah.
apparently haven't read anything else I've read. What does a guy have to do? I write 300 anti-Trump columns and one that isn't pro-Trump, but this
yeah.
just says, I disagree with everything she says, but listen to what she has to say.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden I'm MAGA.
Oh, man. Dan Hart, not MAGA from what I can tell. By the way, are you still a registered Republican, though, right? Or did you end that?
I'm not, but I'm likely to become one again this year.
Nice.
I went back to being unaffiliated, but I'm likely to become a Republican.
Excellent.
Because I go where the good primaries are. Speaking of Betsy
yeah.
McCoy,
yeah.
who is the former lieutenant governor,
yeah.
who was here today in force.
Yeah.
And so I had a nice conversation with her and Ryan Fazio, who are obviously vying for the nomination
sure.
to face Lamont.
Sure. Dan Har, Hearst Connecticut.
Josh Elliott.
Yes, yes. Dan Har, Hearst Connecticut Media. Dan, thanks. Have a happy rest of the week, and we'll chat down the road. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Ryan.
Appreciate it. Dan Har, Hearst Connecticut Media. Joining us right now while he can from D.C., our buddy, our pal, Aaron Navarro. And the buzzwords now are nationalize the elections, huh? Aaron, good afternoon. How are you, sir?
Hey, Paul. Good to be with you.
Nationalize the elections. Now, Aaron, I don't know about you, but I learned in Civics 101, the states run the elections. We elect federal officials, but the states essentially do it. What does Mr. Trump want to do here? When he says nationalize the elections, and I heard a little spin from the press mm-hmm. secretary the other day, what is the buzz on this?
Paul, President Trump has kept this pretty broad. It's no secret that he has problems with how elections have ran, specifically in Democratic cities. That stems from his 2020 loss to former President Joe Biden. But
yeah.
from what we've heard from the president so far this week, he's talked about the federal government taking control, overseeing elections in cities he claims has corruption, has widespread fraud, despite there being no evidence of that. He specifically cited Detroit and Philadelphia in particular. And as you mentioned, the White House spin on this, which we heard earlier this week, is that the president wants to pass what's known as the SAVE Act, which would require photo ID in order to register to vote in federal elections. There are 15 states that do not have any photo ID laws in order to vote. But President Trump is definitely setting some concerning pretext to some experts ahead of the 2026 midterms.
So the impression then, Aaron, is that he's serious about this. This isn't just running something up the poll to get it out there and knowing that this is probably not going to happen. I mean, I know that's hard to read with him, but what's the buzz on that?
It is serious in the sense that it's been something Trump has talked so much about in the past 5-6 years since that 2020 election. So it's something that he's obviously had on the mind for so long. But in terms of what he's specifically said this week, it's been very broad. There's no calls to congressional Republicans to do anything. And in fact, when asked about the president's comments, many congressional Republicans kind of punt a little bit. They say, you know, states run elections. That's mm-hmm. how it should be. But we should have photo ID requirements. What also makes this serious, maybe more so than other comments Trump has made about elections, is the recent seizure of voting records in Fulton County
yeah.
That Trump, the FBI, were involved in. Kind of makes this a bit more of a concerning red flag, but we'll see as it develops leading up to November's election.
All right, Aaron Navarro, CBS News. Aaron, thanks as always, man. We'll be in touch. Take care.
You too, Bo.
All right, thanks. There you go.